From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, March 14th through Friday, March 18th, 2022. It was a week of the beginning of March Madness, as well as the continuation of Madness in March. I mean, doesn't the idea of trying to take over control of a neighboring sovereign nation by dropping bombs on and killing innocent civilians, men, women, and children seem like an act of madness? Something from the Dark Ages? We're about to embark upon a powerful hour of Black Belt Talk Radio, during which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. We've got lefties, righties, and fence sitters. Please don't get angry. Just listen closely, and while doing so, maintain a degree of educated skepticism, regardless of whether or not you agree. We'll be joined by Kevin Casey at the Talkers Communications Center with the top 10 topics of the week. Dom Giordano in Philadelphia discussing unusual gas pumping politics in neighboring New Jersey. Mark Simone in New York City on crime and the economy in the Big Apple. Richard Neer also in New York discussing the more pleasant version of March Madness. John D. McCollier in Santa Cruz, California, sharing insights into Xi Jinping's balancing act. Dr. Dahlia Wax in Las Vegas, Nevada, providing information about the latest COVID variant. And a replay of John DiPietro in the border city of Rzeszów, Poland, discussing his conversations with refugees pouring in from nearby Ukraine. An impressive array of influential yappers from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations and the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do a daily dance of affirmation in a fragmented, noisy world where we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations across the U.S. and the U.K. The past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information's gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcast trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Okay, here we go. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10 this week, March Madness and Tom Brady returns. Let the office pools begin. It is estimated that as much as, if not more, money is going to be wagered by amateur gamblers across America on this year's installment of the NCAA Basketball Championship Tournament than was riding on the Super Bowl. It's also great water cooler diversion.
And the man now referred to as the GOAT in football, meaning greatest of all time, has reversed his recent decision to retire. Tom Brady will be returning this coming season to play quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
At number 9, climate change. Although the war in Ukraine, rising prices at the gas pumps, concern over crime in the streets, and COVID-19 remain day-to-day front burner worries for Americans, the existential issue of climate change continues to permeate our conversation and consciousness week after week.
According to a study released Tuesday by climate scientists at the University of Michigan, allergy season will start weeks earlier and end many days later, and it'll be worse while it lasts, with pollen levels that could be as much as triple in some places as the Earth continues with its current warming trend. And that is certainly something to sneeze at.
At number 8, big tech and social media. First Amendment and privacy issues continue to abound in the national conversation.
House Republicans held a task force meeting on Wednesday to outline priorities for their plans to take on tech giants over issues such as Section 230, but left without a clear consensus on which issues to prioritize. It continues to be complicated, but extremely important stuff.
At number 7, race relations tied with immigration reform. An Illinois appellate court ruled Wednesday that actor Jussie Smollett be released from jail on bond pending his appeal of his conviction for falsely reporting that he had been the victim of a hate crime. Smollett was sentenced last week to 5 months in jail, but his lawyers quickly asked a panel of judges to stay the sentence while they appealed the conviction. which they did.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi publicly thanked SiriusXM satellite radio talk show host Joe Madison for help with raising awareness of and support for H.R. 55, the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, which specifies lynching as a hate crime. Madison also recently spent a couple of months on a hunger strike to promote support for the voting protection bills that ultimately got stalled in the Senate. On the immigration front, the Ukrainian crisis is further muddying up confusion and frustration over America's broken immigration system.
At number six, crime and homelessness. Rising street crime continues to be one of, if not the, driving forces in urban political conversation across America.
And the concurrent rise in urban homelessness is clearly contributing to the ongoing problem.
At number five, the 2022 and 2024 elections. Although there is an element of unanimity between the political parties on dealing with the Ukrainian crisis, and many of the Republicans who initially expressed sympathy with the Russian perspective have subsequently backed off, partisan politics abounds with both sides frantically jockeying for position in the rapidly approaching midterm elections.
And the national conversation abounds with talk and speculation about who will be leading the GOP 2.5 years from now in the presidential race. Former President Donald Trump continues to put on rallies and hint heavily, just short of officially declaring, that he'll be returning to the White House. Interestingly, a growing number of conservatives are not so sure.
At number four, COVID-19. The debate over mask and vaccine mandates appears to be slowing down as Americans grow increasingly optimistic that the pandemic is almost behind us.
However, there is the nagging and growing worry that more variants might be on their way, as indicated by reports of such problems in other parts of the world. The variant currently causing concern is called BA2, which has reported cases in the northeastern United States.
At number three, the economy. The big issues remain inflation, supply chain blockages, and labor force shortages driven by extremely high and rising prices at the gas pumps across America. This, of course, partly ties into the economic war between the U.S. and Russia triggered by the Ukraine crisis.
You can expect airline tickets to become significantly more costly in the coming days, weeks, and months ahead if this situation continues, which it most likely will.
At number two, U.S. relations with China and Russia. Obviously, the Ukraine war has put relations between the U.S. and Russia in the dumpster, as President Joe Biden went so far as to label Russian President Vladimir Putin a war criminal, and the inspirational oratory of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is credited with actually uniting the left and right in America on a level we haven't seen in years.
But the situation with China is not as clear-cut. Chinese President Xi Jinping finds himself walking a very narrow political tightrope in protecting his country's complicated ties with both Russia and the United States.
And at number one this week, the Russia-Ukraine war. The war is now 4 weeks old, and it is hardly going as well for the Russians as Putin had hoped, planned, or expected. Some observers hold out hope that perhaps the Russians will soften at peace talks and save face by accepting that Ukraine adopt a neutral stance as opposed to a pro-NATO position.
That being said, it is still wreaking havoc and suffering upon the Ukrainian people, unleashing a huge humanitarian crisis, and pushing the world frighteningly closer to a nuclear confrontation. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. The Russian invasion of its neighbor and former Soviet satellite Ukraine remains at the top of the Talkers chart. The war is adding fuel, if you'll pardon the pun, to the runaway inflation afflicting the American economy. We're joined now by the dean of Philadelphia Talk Radio, Talkers Heavy 100 member Dom Giordano of Heritage Station WPHT. Dom, what are your listeners and callers saying about the price of gas?
In addition to the outrage over this, is they like to top each other, and then they like to talk about also on the plus side where you can find a great value. And that's something that talk radio can provide second to none, because it's across 50-mile areas. But they are kind of fixated on it because it's one of those things that you can't run away from. You know, we all shop for food and buy different things, but gas is gas. And you see those numbers going up as it's pumping. So they're happy, though, that there might be a day of reckoning here. In other words, who is it that has caused this? And they're hopeful that the public will see that it's not Putin. At this point, you could argue it is, but that this is a Biden deal based upon climate, and there's no getting around that.
For those around the country who don't really know about neighboring New Jersey's gas pump laws, can you explain how they are indeed quite different than most of the nation?
Yeah. It's fascinating to me. And I wrote an article that even got picked up beyond where it usually does because people couldn't believe it. And New Jersey is all self-service, and it's kind of hard to figure exactly how it started. But it has become a thing, not just that people like the convenience of it. They're actually calling me, and as usually they usually agree with me, going wild with all kinds of wild things that will happen if politicians now, Democrats and Republicans, are saying that we realize you could never do this before, but they're having trouble finding people to work various shifts, to be the guy that does the service for the gas station. Ergo, they have to close down because of the law. If you can pump your own, they could maintain this. And it's become like a Jersey tradition more than anything practical or anything. They just yearn for it, if you will, like Jersey tomatoes or pizza in Jersey or something like that. So I happened to, in the course of this, stumble upon an article that went back to Governor Christie. And Christie is a pretty much conservative guy, believes in choice, that you should be able to either get full service or pump it yourself and save money. And he said to NJ.com that he polled it multiple times. The takeaway, 78% of women in Jersey said they would never pump their own gas and they would really look negatively toward anybody that ever proposed it. Other people have, and now these people are boldly proposing it for the reasons I stated. My column said, I think they're not reading Jersey as much as I support, because I don't like to waste time, and that's what happens. I think they're going to be in a world of trouble as this goes through the legislature. These people have made this into a crusade to keep this. And I don't know what goes on in other states, what would happen. It seems pretty bizarre, but it's true.
How do Jerseyites feel about the possible rule change?
It is so ridiculous. They actually tell me that they don't know how to pump gas. And then others call in and said, if you do this, you're going to see so many accidents, fires, whatever, by taking. People in Jersey would not be able to figure out how to pump their gas. Every year, once a year, if you're a local host, this comes up in one way or another. And in the beginning, it's fun. By about 15 minutes into talking about it, people get threatening. Even so much so that I do a side question every day, like a fun thing. And one fun thing was, what's the sign of the apocalypse in a fun way? The winter, you can pump your own gas in New Jersey. Get in the basement. The apocalypse is here.
Dom, you're basically a conservative. So how do you feel about the job Biden is doing in handling the Russia-Ukraine crisis?
He is not projecting anything that shows leadership. Well, let's start at the beginning. I think that it is true that Putin sensed coming off Afghanistan, the weakness here, and that's why he went in. But however Biden has gotten to it, I'm supportive, and a lot of listeners are, of the idea of cutting off Russian oil. Of course, they want us to drill. He's not doing that. But that he has resisted for whatever reasons. We're told there's a mixed thing going on inside the administration. This emotional impetus to involve America more, ergo things like no-fly zones or something close to that. And for that, even though people usually attack, they're supportive. And they're looking at this weird coalition of people that, like the women on The View, but Republican hawks, who think somehow or another it's a good idea to possibly get into a shooting war with Russia. So I would say when it comes to keeping us out of that, grudgingly, people are giving Biden some props. The problem is, though, they're not sure that he has any capability, that he's actually directing anything in this. And it comes back to, again, whether it's coincidence or not, Trump president 4 years, Putin didn't move in. Obama president, Biden president, he moved in.
And since I have you, you're known as an expert on education as well as an advocate of education. What are your thoughts about the impact year-round daylight saving time will have upon students?
Yeah, I am in favor of the idea, but everything comes with a cost, a permanent daylight rather than the flipping back and forth. The only thing is, though, the idea of kids going to school in the dark is a bit problematic. I'm not a big fan, by the way, of this whole thing that teenagers can't learn at early morning hours. We ought to have them coming in. You know, people didn't teach like I did later in the day. It's kind of an excuse. I wouldn't start school, though. I taught in some situations where the first class was at 7:30. I'd have a more reasonable time. But with any one of these things, there's an upside and downside. And I think turning the clocks back and forth and doing all that has more downside than upside, ultimately.
That's Dom Giordano of WPHT in Philadelphia. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career: Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics. Also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, an analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. As mentioned, the war in Ukraine dominates the news talk media world. We checked in with Mark Simone, the talker's Heavy 100 host, heard daily on WOR in New York City. Mark, how are your listeners and callers reacting to the war now that it's in its fourth week?
It's got everything going. I mean, from war to humanitarian crisis to it's endless drama. When Zelensky made that speech before Congress, people were so impressed with this guy, with his words, with how articulate he was, how heroic, courageous, a man of action. We kind of wish we had a president like that. The contrast between that and a very slow, quiet Joe Biden, that's one thing the listeners have talked about. They kind of understand it has to be a limit to our involvement, especially militarily. A no-fly zone, that would be military action, so we can't do that. But they want us to give everything, and supplies, ammunition, whatever we can give to Zelensky. You know, in New York City, we got the biggest Ukrainian population in the country. So a lot of them are tuned in every day. It is the number one story and will be for, I think, months to come.
Well, I have you, Mark. How's New York's new mayor doing in the fight against crime?
The new mayor, the bar was set as low as it could be set by the last mayor, who was a total disaster. This mayor is, the differences are, he looks better, he sounds better. He's out and about all over New York. The old mayor never left his house, never even went to City Hall, barely. I mean, just was invisible. This mayor is all over the place. Press conferences, very, very out there in public, but also in restaurants and parties, openings, whatever. So that's a good thing. He has said all the right things about crime. But so far, I hate to say it, it's just talk. I hope it turns into action. We hope it's just a slow start. We had this anti-crime task force. This was the best at stopping crime, getting guns, best undercover detectives. So he promised to bring that back. But when he's just brought it back this week, but it's in uniform, which is entirely different. But yeah, I mean, give the guy a chance. It's only 2 months. So far, not much difference. The new police commissioner is impressive. But again, she hasn't done anything yet. So all the talk is right. All the things they're saying are right. Let's just see if they get it done. Our biggest problem is this crazy lunatic district attorney who doesn't want to put anybody in jail, even armed robbers, burglars, all of that. So they've got to do more to stand up to him. But let's just keep our fingers crossed and hope all this talk actually turns into some action.
Are there signs of the economy improving in New York City?
You know, the New York economy, all you hear is people are moving to Florida. Everybody's leaving. Everybody's moving to Florida. Everybody's, you know, they can't stand New York. The taxes, there is some truth to that around the state. But if you check the New York City population, it's increased every year. It increased last year. It will increase this year. Real estate sales last quarter are through the roof, a 30-year record. It might have been the all-time record, but they ran out of inventory. So people are coming in. I just checked the latest numbers. In New York, 36% are back to work in the offices. Traffic is back. The restaurants are packed all the time. Our largest hotel, the New York Hilton, I walked through the other day for the first time. It was packed with tourists. There was a convention going on. So it's coming back. You know, after 9/11, they said New York will never come back. Nobody will live there. They specifically said nobody's going to live downtown ever again. Well, that 2 years became the hottest neighborhood in New York. They said nobody will live in high skyscrapers anymore. Well, that became the biggest selling real estate. So as they say, never bet against New York, no matter what. It will come back, and it looks like it's starting to.
That's Mark Simone, one of New York City's most popular radio personalities, heard daily on the great WOR radio. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Let's stay in the Big Apple, but lighten things up a bit. We're joined now by the legendary sports talker and murder mystery author, Richard Neer. With so many terrible things happening in the world right now, with the economy and the war and madness in general, I guess sports madness is a relief, and thank goodness we have sports to turn to. A couple of things I want to touch base with you, Richard, on is March Madness and Tom Brady. Let's start with March Madness. For those who don't understand what it's all about, this is like a major event at businesses when it comes to office pools. Am I correct?
Yes, indeed it is, Michael. And now with the advent of legalized gambling in many states, it becomes even more than just friendly wagers with office pools for a couple of bucks. It turns into a major, major thing. I would not be surprised if in toto that this exceeds what was bet on the Super Bowl, only because it lasts for a longer period of time than just one game.
I read somewhere that bosses should take note that not only is all of this activity going on under their noses, but that it actually has been proven through studies to take time away, significant time away from productivity, all the buzz within the offices about the basketball. What do you think of that?
Well, it may be true, but, you know, if it gets employees engaged and bonding with each other, it might turn into be an overall good thing. Although certainly short term, you could understand people talking about the NCAA rather than the next client.
Is college basketball really that big?
Depends on where you go. In some of the metropolitan areas in the Northeast, not so much, but certainly throughout the South. And the ACC, which now is not just in the South. I mean, Syracuse is in the ACC. But, yeah, it's something that, you know, a lot of people don't pay any attention to college basketball during the season. And then when they get in the tournament, they like to pick their favorites.
Let's switch over to Tom Brady, talk about favorites. What the heck is going on with this guy?
Well, there's lots of speculation. None of us know for sure. But basically what he's saying is he retired for 40 days. And then, you know, this guy is so competitive that he's sitting around the house with Giselle and the children thinking, okay, now what do I do? I've got, yeah, I do some commercials. But, you know, he wants to compete and he feels great. He's in great shape. So he decided, well, you know, why should I walk away at my peak when I can still win a championship? So I'm going to play next year, and Tampa is the logical place.
I had heard rumors that he was interested in going to the 49ers. I gather you don't think there was any truth to that.
Well, he might have had some interest. I mean, he is from Northern California. His parents still live there. So there's a possibility that if Jimmy Garoppolo gets traded or cut, that Tom Brady could go there. And, you know, depending on what happens in the draft and free agency, you could make a case that San Francisco 49ers might be closer to a championship than Tampa. And boy, would that be a feather in his cap if he wins it with three different franchises, New England, Tampa, and San Francisco. But I don't know that that speculation is all that serious. I think it just, you connect the dots, but I don't know that there's any truth there.
As an observer and an expert on sports, do you think at this point in his career he is that great, that It is to be assumed there's a very good chance any team he goes to will win a Super Bowl at this point.
Well, I think we found out in football that it's not just the quarterback, that there are a lot of players on the team, on the roster. And if you're not surrounded by the right kind of talent, Giselle Bündchen famously said Tommy cannot throw the ball and catch the ball at the same time. He has to have good receivers. He is not the most mobile quarterback, so he needs protection from his offensive line. So it doesn't necessarily convey that if Tom Brady is your quarterback, you're going to win a championship. But he provides, I mean, last year he led the league in yards and touchdowns. So he's still got it.
As you're not a medical expert, but certainly you follow these things and know the vulnerability of age in sports. Do you think that in spite of the fact that he's still an excellent quarterback, that being in his mid-40s, that he is subject to more physical danger than he would be younger? In other words, is he cruising for a bruising?
Well, you're right. I'm not a medical expert, but he might be in better condition at 45 than another quarterback at 33 might be. So it's hard to evaluate that. But look, it's the NFL, and one hit on any player in the league could end their career. It's a very dangerous collision sport. So in a way, he is certainly taking a chance with his health. But in any previous season, he was doing the same thing.
That's sports talk radio legend and murder mystery author Richard Neer of Heritage Station WFAN in New York City. Check out the latest in his popular Riley King series titled Beware of Darkness, available at Amazon.com. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Rap. Back to the serious stuff. Let's head out to Santa Cruz, California and visit with Jonty McCollier, who along with Michael Olson and Billy Graff host the weekly standout show titled China Watch Radio on our affiliate KSL.
I come from a background where in the first half dozen years of my life, I was growing up in apartheid South Africa, wherein there was this belief in separateness and this a whole collection of horrors, of violent separateness. And my parents said, you know, little Jonathan, we want you to meet Skumbusa. And me and Skumbusa would play on the slip and slide in the sunlight and giggle and laugh. And so I've always had this kind of a feeling about who to blame. With regards to the relationship with the United States and China, there's something. The United States and China are in the process of getting a divorce. And there's going to be some sort of custody battle over Taiwan. There's going to be issues of... Do we deserve alimony payments for the $4.5 billion of intellectual property that's been stolen from us? So things of this nature are playing on the global stage. I really enjoy analogies to help bring things together. Now, I think it'd be very unfortunate if the reason for the divorce is F-35s and supercarrier groups and carrier killer missiles. That sounds like the sort of divorce wherein we don't really go through a meaningful process of understanding our role, ourselves. And my hope is that we draw attention to these contrasts that are becoming more and more apparent as technology pushes things forward. Because now we're seeing, what I believe we're seeing in the relationship between the United States and China is a difference in the definition of what a human being is and how we should treat each other. And the solution that China is coming up with is a sort of engineering solution of the human as a biological machine that can be controlled and manipulated through things like the social credit system and big data and constant surveillance of a panopticon nature. Whereas we have a history of seeing the individual as something more than just a biological machine, where our own, our agency, our ability to choose, and also our life experiences have a value in and of themselves. And I think we're losing sight of this. And we're playing with the ideas of following China down the authoritarian rabbit hole. Now, we can win the battle. We can, you know, rise to have another century of United States dominance in the world. But if we do that at the expense of this deeper understanding of what it means to be a human, then we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater in a profound way.
The whole human rights issue balances on this particular concept that you've expressed. What about currently in terms of geopolitics? Xi Jinping is faced with kind of walking the line between his relationship with Russia over the Ukraine war and still having a relationship, certainly economically, with the United States. How do you think he's going to handle it?
Xi is also facing the possibility of being deposed. This is something that we try to really keep our ear to the rail to. And I don't know that a lot of other journalistic organizations do this. So he's in a very interesting balancing act right now. We are going to be reporting on the use of lockdowns as a political strategy. There's regions who may find themselves locked down if their political elites are opposing Xi's rule, things of that nature. It's in terms of the situation with Russia, it's very easy to jump up and say, well, they both have this history of Marxism. Obviously, they're allies. But I think it's a lot more complex than that. And it's easy to say, well, China needs Russia's oil. But can Russia just simply turn around on a dime and start shipping oil that was oil from infrastructure that's built in the west of Russia all the way to China? It's not that easy to do. So there's a lot of nuance, and there's a heck of a lot of risk for China right now. They're in the hot seat, but there's risk for us. We're playing with the dollar as a reserve currency here in a major way, and we're forcing them to start using alternate systems to the ones that were constructed through the process starting with Bretton Woods after the Second World War.
That's John D. McCollier, co-host of China Watch Radio on our affiliate on the Central California coast, KSCO Santa Cruz. Coming up next, a conversation with Dr. Dahlia Wax about the latest COVID-19 variants and an audio trip back to the Polish-Ukrainian border with our brave correspondent, John DePietro. You're plugged in to the Michael Harrison Wrap.
This report is brought to you by Genesis 2 Project, G2P. Recently, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released a preliminary report on possible threats posed by UFOs, now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, UAP, and the progress the Department of Defense UAP Task Force has made in understanding any threats. Dr. J.C. Van Valkenburg is a former Los Alamos National Lab biophysicist who has been working with G2P to bring scientifically sound UAP data to the public.
G2P has released the first scientifically authenticated documentation of UAPs, including images captured with infrared technology. Primo Forensics performed the digital forensic analysis.
In tandem with the ODNI report, these data support the development of relevant processes, policies, technologies, and training for the U.S. military and government personnel upon encountering UAP. Visit Genesis2Project.com.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. Discussion about COVID-19 has inched back up to number 4 on the talkers chart. Although debate about mandates has tapered off, people are now concerned about the latest variants in the news. For insight, we turn to our medical correspondent, Dr. Dahlia Wax, a nationally noted physician heard daily across the country on the Genesis Communications Network. Dr. Wax, what's the latest?
So we have two variants that we're watching. One is the Deltacron, as you had said. That's the one where it is a combined Delta variant and Omicron variant, where at first it was picked up in Cyprus. And then French researchers last week said, yeah, this is starting to spread in Europe, where it has the genes of both the Delta variant and Omicron variant. Even though we're not overly scared and we just don't know how severe this is going to be, it's concerning because we were hoping Delta would have already gone by the wayside. Alpha's gone. The wild type virus is gone. We don't want Delta to come back. Delta was deadly. So if Delta is now piggybacking Omicron and we've created a recombinant form of the virus, which has been detected in the U.S. as well, this could bode badly for us, but right now it's too early to tell. In the meantime, we are noticing a rise in our wastewater samples of the baby Omicron or the sub-Omicron variant or stealth Omicron. And this sub-variant of Omicron is, I guess, doubling or tripling every couple weeks, such that now it's 23% of the current cases. And we are still dealing with the virus, as we see President Obama. Former President Obama just became sick with it. The husband of Vice President Kamala Harris just came down with COVID. So COVID is still here. Why? Most of us should have gotten Omicron. But if the sub-variant is starting to now make its way, then yes, we could be looking at a new wave, especially since China's on lockdown. South Korea has had hundreds of thousands of new cases each day. We hope that this isn't going to be the next wave of Omicron or of COVID.
What about the vaccines?
The vaccine does provide protection against severe hospitals or severe cases, hospitalization, and death. The problem is we don't have an updated version. So all we have is the version that was made to the wild type, the one prior to the alpha wave. So it's better than nothing, but we are seeing Omicron escape its immunity. Sadly, we're also seeing Deltacron have the same outer shell as Omicron. So even though those boosters might remind our immunity to find a to be aware of variants of COVID, we are so overdue for a more better formulated one that I hope they hurry up and do it, because I think that's going to be the key to staving off some of these waves, because we keep using an older outdated vaccine that gives us some protection, but it's like taking the flu shot from 2019 for the 2022 flu season.
So let me get this straight. If people have been vaccinated or have been exposed to Omicron, does that give them immunity to these new variants?
That's a fantastic question. So if we did have Delta or we did have Omicron and we've had the vaccine, we should have a strong amount of hybrid immunity. The problem is we don't know how long that hybrid immunity lasts. The one thing that shocked a lot of us doctors is people who had Delta and were vaccinated and boosted still got Omicron. So if Deltacron has the outer shell of Omicron and people got Omicron despite being vaccinated, boosted, or being ill with COVID, it might mean our natural immunity might not be lasting as long as we hoped.
You were very active in the movement to have one standard time across the nation as opposed to standard and daylight saving. Well, are you pleased with the result?
The daylight savings time changes has been kind of a thorn in our side because it has been an archaic practice that we've used since wartime, World War I, then World War II, and it was, you know, to save coal. So us going through the time changes apparently had health risks, especially with the spring forward. I've been feeling horrible all week because when we wake up, it's dark. It messes with our circadian rhythm. And it takes a while for us to regroup. And they found health risks that have even been documented in studies with the spring forward, such as heart attack risk going up, stroke risk, car accident, workplace accident, suicide, issues with in vitro fertilization. And even though many of those risks are negated with the fall back where we gain that hour, many of us doctors are like, why are we still doing this? It just makes no sense. And so I've been complaining about it on air for years. And my friend, Dr. Paul Kalikas, who was an internal medicine doctor, said, why don't we try to make this happen? And so I did some research and it looks like most states had already passed legislation to pick one time or the other, daylight savings or standard. But it just nobody's really kind of taken the pulse of the people. So I started a petition and we've had over 200,000 people respond respond. And the majority of them are asking Congress to just pick one time and stick with it, whether it's standard, whether it's savings. I prefer standard, but the problem is savings is what is passed in my state, Nevada, the state nearby, California, as well as now with the Sunshine Protection Act, daylight saving time is what passed with Marco Rubio. And the bill that he submitted to Congress. So for the first time, I guess in a long time, the Senate has voted unanimously to just keep us on one time, but it would be daylight saving time, which is the time we have now. Then it goes to the House, then it would get signed by Biden. And if it does go into play, it wouldn't go into play until November 2023, where we just don't fall back. We just stay on daylight saving. Now, this does come with some controversy. Apparently, back in the 70s, they tried to do a daylight saving experiment where they switched it in January to the daylight saving. So people had to go through that, what we're going through now. And then kids were walking to school in the dark. It was cold. And so apparently it lost its popularity. But if they do it this way, where it's more transitional, where we just don't keep changing the clock in the fall and then in the spring again, I think more people will be used to it. And the CDC has been calling for schools to start later anyway. So we might eventually start seeing schools start a little later so kids aren't walking around in the dark anyway.
So Dr. Wax, are you saying that we left it up to government and that government picked the wrong one?
Well, it's funny because I get why they did saving time, because most of the states have already asked for that. And so daylight saving time is, since the spring forward is so kind of painful for so many, it seemed more political to go that way. A lot of us doctors do prefer standard time. There's been studies showing standard time seems to be better because then, like I said, we're not waking up in the dark. But already our behaviors are changing with remote working, with remote school, with, you know, so I think that could be overcome. For me, where I stood and my petition was just pick one time. I don't care if it's standard, I don't care if it's saving, just stop the biannual time changes. And I think overall, we'll see health benefits.
That's Talkers Heavy 100 radio host Dr. Dahlia Wax of the Genesis Communications Network. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Last week, radio talk show host John DePietro of Rhode Island station WNRI in Woonsocket packed up his microphone, smartphone, and protective clothing and booked a flight to Poland with the hope of being able to get across the border into Ukraine and report back to his listeners in the U.S. It's been an eye-opening experience, to say the least, and a great piece of talk radio reporting. I interviewed John on last week's program from Rzeszów, Poland. Reaction to that conversation was so positive, we decided to run an excerpt from it again this week. What an experience for you, not just for the people listening to this across America and across the UK, where we are heard on podcast radio and a number of stations. This is a heck of an experience for you. People should know that you're not representing a major network. You're not representing a major news organization. You're on a radio station in Rhode Island, and you're using new media, and you finance this totally by yourself. And what kind of psychological thought process did you have to go through to reach a point where you got on a plane and went to a city you've never been in that's several miles away from a country at war with Russia? I mean, wow.
Well, you know what? First of all, I don't know if one of them, I mean, I've worked for some of the bigger companies. I don't know if they'd let someone do it, because there's definitely an element of danger. I have traveled Europe. I've traveled a little bit. This is where the story is. And what I like about it is, you know, it's just been such a polarizing time between the elections and COVID. I'm getting back to, and I'd like, just let people tell their stories. Regular people have incredible, riveting stories. And then it's what these people are experiencing. You just think of what it would have been like to not being in our, what would it have been like to be in our format during the Second World War or something like that. Mm-hmm. This is extraordinary what's taking place. There's a common bond. They can tell that I want to just hear their stories. They want people to know what's happening. It means something to them that, you know, that someone like myself has taken the time to go over. I got on the phone with some of my top sponsors, explained what I want to do, and everyone was just 100% on board. So I thought, you know what, if I think about this too long, I'm going to talk myself out of it. It's been very, very challenging. It is tough doing the broadcast in a foreign country. But you know, they can tell. I also have two Mike flags, and I put a blue and yellow just so they realize that I'm supportive of Ukraine. I also, Michael, I've bounced some of the propaganda that we hear off them, and they have no idea what I'm talking about.
Explain.
These are poor, innocent people that, and I want to just also stress, they have pictures. They live in nice homes, and they have nice businesses. This woman showed me what a beautiful garden, and they have such a beautiful way of life, and it's completely, completely gone. I mean, we see like the hurricane comes ripping through Florida, but they love their country. They have a nice life. And in a moment's notice, pack up one bag and they leave it all behind. It is brutal to watch, but it's, yeah. I find them very inspiring, and they have a good spirit about them. Those two children, those two teenagers, the brother and sister, they're traveling alone. Their parents stayed behind. They got them on the train.
Oh, my.
It's, you know, it's just the perspective of, and I even put out, I don't want to hear another parent complain about they had to go on a plane with their child at Disney World and they couldn't keep the kid quiet for the trip. Oh, we see, you know, the families in the restaurant and the child's, you know, walking around the restaurant causing a problem. This is, I mean, these are poor. They're not poor, but they're just innocent
gotcha.
People. And they love their country. They love the president.
It puts it in perspective, doesn't it, though?
It
puts our issues into perspective, doesn't it? And I tend to think that this war is going to change the times in terms of talk radio conversation, the main subjects we talk about, and even the propaganda you referred to. I think a lot of people are doing second yes. thinking and a lot of soul searching as to where they've stood on Russia and where they've stood on Putin up until this point. Do you agree?
I do. Or at least, I mean, I hope so. Because this is, you know, and again, I think social media was caught off guard with some of the propaganda that is out there. And I think our country, I mean, we're definitely a little bit behind the eight ball trying to explain the nature of exactly what's going on. But he is universally, every person, they hate Putin. They admire Zelensky. The little 15-year-old boy said he and his friends weren't sure what to make of him, and they play Call of Duty. And the fact that he is sticking around and he is willing to fight for the people, they are all rallying. I mean, it's just so different, Michael, simply because, and we've been living through it, this divided nation, and, you know, the election was stolen and January 6th. And I'm speaking with people that are truly, they are under attack, and they are not by their choice, but at war, and their way of life is over. And I'm not sure everybody gets that. That we have two nations that seemingly, when we talk about an attack on democracy, that January 6th was not that. This is an attack on democracy. And you're really seeing people that this is not like the power's out, or again, you know, a blizzard comes in, or a hurricane, or, you know, some of the people stuck in traffic. This is a game changer, and the shockwaves are all over Europe.
That's John DePietro of WNRI Rhode Island speaking with us last week from Rzeszów, Poland, where he's reporting back to the States his observation of the massive influx of Ukrainian immigrants and other aspects of the war taking place on the other side of its nearby border, with, of course, violence getting closer and closer to Poland. John is still there, and he finally made his way to the border between Poland and Ukraine. You can check it out on YouTube. And that about does it for this latest installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation, looking back at the week of Monday, March 14th through Friday, March 18th, 2022. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. The Michael Harrison Wrap. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications, presented in association with Talk Media Network and Talkers Magazine. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved.